Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're happy to welcome an amazing Canadian artist who's not only a founding member of the hit group Great Big Sea, but also a renowned solo artist, author, and actor. Alan Doyle drops in to talk about his new album, So Let's Go, and his best-selling memoir, Where I Belong. Up-and-coming Canadian artist Candle Osborne joins us to talk about her solo album, In Flames. Indie rock group Girls in Hawaii discuss their new album, Everest, and overcoming the tragic death of their drummer. We then wrap things up with a new remix from Noelia and Dave O'Day, Spell.
Capture your need for sound.
We're happy to welcome to the show a very talented Canadian artist who has made his mark not only as a founding member of Great Big Sea, but also as a solo artist, actor, and most recently as an author releasing the best-selling memoir, Where I Belong. Alan Doyle, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Alan, you've had a lot going on, not only releasing your first book, but also releasing a new solo album, So Let's Go. Were you working on both projects simultaneously?
Yeah, let me see now. Most of the Where I Belong book was written during the Great Big Sea 20th Anniversary Tour. We did most of the press and stuff for that tour up front. So we had a lot of hours in the day where we'd roll into a town, you know, early in the morning and often not have to do anything until later in the evening. So there was enough time to get the book written kind of in the days. So the songs for the record were kind of written right after that tour, like early in 2014. And we recorded most of it that year and off we go.
I wanted to ask you about the recording process this time around. You know, your last solo album, Boy on Bridge, did both projects, like when you were working on Boy on Bridge and then working on So Let's Go, did you find the tunes came out fairly easily?
One kind of informed the other in an odd way, in a way I didn't expect, because one of the big lessons I learned doing the book is that I had no idea how my young life so perfectly prepared me for my adult life. You know, I was from this little small fishing town with really specific skill sets and economy, you know, putting out cod tongs and working on the wharf and all that kind of stuff. And I grew up in a really musical family. So, who knew that it's such a little small experience like that could prepare you so well, you know, for life on the road and, you know, with all the lessons that you learned both musically about Celtic music and traditional music. But then, of course, about being a part of a team and being a part of the community and the economy and all that kind of stuff. And it just ended up being a perfect little way from one thing to inform the other. So I ended up, when I started writing songs for this record, I wanted to pay tribute to my younger life a little more than I probably had in the past. I always thought it was kind of cool to have, you know, Newfoundland traditional roots and all this, but it's kind of multiplied after the book because it's just obviously the most unique thing to me, and this is the thing I've come to appreciate even more.
Did you find when you were writing the book that things just sort of poured out of you? Like, did you actually even have to stop yourself from maybe not writing too much, but, you know, getting too specific? Like, did it just flow?
Most of the stuff in the book I were stories I've been telling about growing up in Petty Harbor since I was a kid. So, and the songs were kind of specific. A lot of them were ideas I had for the longest while that I just wanted to do in a certain way with certain people. You know, I didn't find it too hard.
Now, I've actually been fortunate to interview a bunch of artists from out east, a lot of them, it seems, from Halifax, which really seems to have this burgeoning music scene that artists really want to grow and cultivate. And a bunch of the artists I've actually spoken to, you know, have no desire whatsoever to, like, go to Toronto or go to Vancouver or any other of these, like, Canadian meccas. Do you see that happening as well in Newfoundland?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it. I mean, Great Big Sea, all the guys in Great Big Sea only ever lived in Newfoundland. You know, like I moved from Petty Harbor about 25 kilometers out to St. John's, and that's the only two towns I've ever lived in my life. And I think there was a time, you know, perhaps before, you know, the easy connectivity of the modern world that we're living in one of the central parts of the world made being in a band a lot easier and probably essential. But I don't think it's true anymore. I mean, I think a lot of the bands are realizing that, you know, staying connected to what makes them unique from their own backyards is more important than, you know, than being within 10 feet of your record company or something.
Joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show is recording artist, actor, and author Alan Doyle. Check out his website, alandoyle.ca. If I can further that sort of question along, you know, speaking about sort of sticking to your roots, you've had, you know, success in so many other elements of the entertainment industry. You're also, you know, friends and collaborators with Australian actor Russell Crowe. Did you ever feel a pressure, though, to leave Canada, like to maybe go to New York or Los Angeles to really see how much you could take things?
No. Maybe I should have, but I didn't. I hope that's not bad.
I'm sure it's not.
Maybe I should have. Maybe if I was more ambitious or something like that. No, I've never even been tempted to live anywhere else. I don't know why, other than I love where I am, I suppose. I feel like I know exactly where I'm supposed to be, and so that's where I go. I mean, I love to travel, right? So, I mean, I'm gone quite a bit, you know, a third of the year sometimes. And I've never found being away from many of the big entertainment centers to be a hindrance. I found it quite opposite, actually. I found it, you know, that there's a lot of people walking around the streets of Toronto, L.A., New York, looking for work, you know, and knocking on the same doors, you know, day in, day out. And then if you go there and you bring something that's honest and true, and it can often be a breath of fresh air.
How do you feel when you're doing your television and film work? Is it like a complete, you know, departure from what you're doing as a recording artist? And do you find that your heart belongs more with one than the other?
Oh, well, music is the heart of my life. I mean, that's what I do. That's what I always say I do for a living, you know. And concerts are my favorite thing to do. And that, all the other stuff, Kelly, has always just come to me. I've never gone to look for it. I didn't go look for a book deal. You know, the people from Random House came to me and said, hey, would you like to write a book? And I said, I'll give it a go. You know, and I never looked for acting gigs. You know, I was working with Russell on a bunch of music, and they, as luck would have it, they needed a guy who could play the lute for a movie, you know. And so I got a gig playing the lute in a movie, you know. And then the next thing they liked it, I guess, so the part got bigger and bigger. And shortly after that, friends of mine, my oldest and dearest friends, were starting a TV series back in Newfoundland, and they wrote this recurring part for me to play in it. And, you know, on it goes. So I don't often seek it out. It just finds me, you know, and so far. And that's fine with me.
Alan, for people who don't know, how did you actually start collaborating with Russell and his band?
Here in Toronto. We met backstage at the NHL Hockey Awards. He was here shooting a movie called Cinderella Man. And I was here giving out a trophy at the NHL Awards. I was going to go over and say hello to him backstage. And he came over to me because he was a massive fan of Great Big Sea. He had heard of Great Big Sea in the late 90s when he was in Alberta recording a film called Mystery Alaska, a hockey movie. So we just struck up a friendship, and he asked if I wanted to come write some songs for this band he had. And I said, yes. I ended up producing a record for that band and then touring a little bit in that band in Australia and France. And we just kept making music. We kept writing songs for, you know, me and for Great Big Sea and for movies and for his stuff and for a few little fun collaborations we've done since. It's been great.
What was it like being over in Australia, Alan? Because obviously you have such a big following here in Canada. Did you notice like a difference over there with just the audience?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's always cool when you start somewhere fresh. You know, it's always fun because, you know, one of the things I love to do the most as an entertainer is to win over people that know nothing about you. And, you know, if you're put in front of a group of people that has never heard a single syllable out of your mouth before, and you have to try to impress them right from scratch, I still find that kind of thrilling.
How have you found audiences, you know, you're on your tour right now with the album, So Let's Go. Do you find a lot of people come out to see you because you're Alan Doyle of Great Big Sea, and then they realize just, you know, you've got this completely other element going on? Or do you find people have obviously, you know, known about your solo career and are coming to see you?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I can't believe that there's many, if any, people in Canada or U.S. for that matter, that don't know I'm the guy from Great Big Sea. They would have to, wouldn't they? I mean, like, mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so that would have to be the top tier of it. I'm the guy from Great Big Sea, you know, and then that's awesome for me. And there are some people, I think, that, you know, have gravitated towards some of the other stuff I've been doing, probably like the book or the movies or the TV stuff or solo records or whatever. I think I'll just give people a different thing to cling to if they like it or not. But, you know, I mean, I don't if I go the rest of my life and people think of me as the guy from Great Big Sea, nobody will be happier than me.
Now, speaking of Great Big Sea, can we expect, you know, new music at some point from you guys as a group? Because I know right now you're focusing on solo material, but your Great Big Sea fans, I'm sure they're chomping at the bit.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I mean, it's not up to me. And my vote is yes, let's go. You know, I mean, but Sean's vote is no because he's leaving. He wants to go through it totally on his own. So that leaves me and Bob to try and figure out how to do it without him. And that's not easy, but not impossible. It'll just take a little bit of time. We hope to do it.
Now, obviously, Alan, you've been in the music industry for a while. I think you probably have a really great sense of the Canadian music scene. How do you feel it is overall these days? Because I know just as a radio announcer, at least on the pop side, that's where I sort of keep myself busy. It seems like it's gotten so much better in the last 5 to 7 years. What is your take on the industry, and do you think we're in a healthy place?
I never thought the music industry was unhealthy. You know, I never thought it was. You know, I heard a great quote about music business nowadays, you know, in the record business especially. It's like, because the record business is not broke. It's just nowhere near as perfect as it was in 1985. You know, like where we had, you know, we developed this new product called CDs so we could make them cheaper than records, but we could sell them for more. We had stores lined up and down the streets and the malls that only sold our product.
Right.
We had television stations that only advertised our products 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for free. You know, and the list goes on. So I think it's good. What I'm encouraged mostly like is the music. I mean, the music is still great. You know, you listen to even the hardcore pop music in the last 2 or 3 years is so honest and real. You know, like last night we were on the bus and someone found Ed Sheeran's record. And I was like, man, this is a dude and a guitar singing songs he liked. This is ancient, yet amazing. You know, like this is, I don't know, I'm thrilled by the state of music right now.
Is there any artist out there now, Alan, like an Ed Sheeran perhaps, that you'd love to like do a duet with or a collaboration? Because it seems like that's where it's at a lot these days. Like even with, you know, Sir Paul McCartney hanging out with Rihanna and Kanye in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, anybody. I mean, I've always been up for anything like that. It'd be so fun, you know. Even just here in Canada, it'd be great. Like, I don't know. I always thought it'd be really great to do, to take Newfoundland traditional music and marry it with some of the other Canadian, you know, forms. You know, I said that would be amazing to, you know, to marry Newfoundland traditional instrumental music with some street stuff they're doing in Vancouver or whatever. It would be so much fun, you know. I've done it a couple of times where we've made traditional Newfoundland music with French-Canadian traditional music. It's incredible. Any of that stuff, I think it's always fun and interesting just to see what happens.
I wanted to ask you as well, you spoke just a few moments ago about the music industry and how it's obviously changed, you know, even just in technology. Are you a social media guy, Alan? Do you enjoy communicating with your fans? Because I know when I was a kid, I wish I could have had Twitter so I could talk to, you know, Janet Jackson.
I love it. I, you know, it's like it's made the road, especially like a much less lonely place because you're always talking to people. Whenever you want, you can talk to someone, you know. And especially when you feel like your focus when you're on the road, of course, is entertaining people, and that's your job when you're on the road is to engage and entertain, you know, people that buy tickets to your concerts and that kind of stuff. And you get so many more opportunities to include them and stuff. And it's, I love it.
Now, we hope we're going to have a Great Big Sea album from you guys. What else is coming from Alan Doyle in the next year or so? Obviously, you're working this album. Can we expect another book and maybe more TV and film appearances?
I'd like to do all of it. My main focus in the next block of time is touring with this great band I have, touring the So Let's Go record. It's pretty booked up solid until the early part of the fall of this year already, so we'll see how it goes. I mean, I don't know what, I'm not totally sure what the last quarter of 2015 holds yet. And that's totally fine with me. We'll see what comes up.
Alan, thank you so much for spending time with us on the show. We really, really appreciate it.
Hey, it's great fun to talk to you all the time. Thank you.
That's recording artist, actor, and author Alan Doyle. Check out his website, alandoyle.ca.
Hey, everybody. Alan Doyle here, hanging out with Kelly on the Kelly Alexander Show. It's going to be deadly.
It's the magic hour in the middle of the park when it's not quite daylight and not quite dark. The edge of the water is where it all starts. We might never get back here again. And time stands still in the river's arms, sinking slowly away from the lights of the car. But we see each other, we know. us and loves us as we are.
We welcome a young artist from a musical family to the Kelly Alexander Show. Kendall Osborne hails from Victoria, British Columbia, but calls Montreal her home and is now building up quite the following with her first solo album, In Flames, and her stomping single, Demon. Kendall, welcome to the show.
That was a lovely introduction.
I work hard on writing these, so thank you very much.
I can tell.
So I have to start off by mentioning your father, Neil Osborne, is a member of the group 5440. And so I'm assuming that you obviously grew up around all things musical. Did you know at a very young age that a career in music was going to be your path in life?
No, I really didn't. And it's funny, I feel like it happens with a lot of kids. Like, you're not really wanting to follow in your parents' footsteps when you're young, you know? So I was not interested in playing music at all until I was about 15.
Wow.
And I started playing guitar a little bit, got a few friends to teach me some chords and some, like, Pink Floyd songs and whatever. But I didn't take it seriously as a career until I was about 20 and I realized that it was possible.
Awesome. Now, did your dad's band influence the type of music that you listened to as a kid, or kind of like you just mentioned where you don't really want much to do with your parents, did you sort of branch out on your own and find your own musical tastes?
Well, I always loved everything he played for me, whether it was his band or anything else, but I was also a kid, so, you know, I would listen to Aqua and Led Zeppelin in the same 10 minutes and think they were both awesome.
That's amazing. That's my first reference to an Aqua track, Barbie Girl, on the show. I love it.
Oh, I love that song.
How would you actually describe your sound, Kendall?
I really have no idea. People seem to describe me in all kinds of ways, and I don't even know what genre I am. People are like pop, noir, country, folk, rock, blues, indie. Okay.
That's awesome.
But I just write and then whatever. Call me whatever.
Now, I know you mentioned that the guitar you picked up, is that, do you write with that? Is that the instrument that you write to, or do you sort of just come up with melodies in your head and then sort of go from there?
Yeah, I almost always write with my guitar sitting down with a pen and paper, or sometimes I'll be like on the bus and get a song idea and go, crap, and I have to sing into my phone, really embarrassing. People give me weird looks, but... the only way you can remember it, you know?
How important is the writing process to you? Like, do you want to write most of the material yourself? Is it important for you to be the main writer?
Yeah, it is. I used to consider myself more of a writer than a singer, because when I first started, I didn't quite figure out my voice. I was very shy, and I just played in other bands. I just wrote the songs, and I thought, hey, maybe I can have a career just writing. And it wasn't until I found myself like alone without any bands because everyone kind of split up and broke up as bands do. And I realized, wow, I really need to learn to sing my own songs if I want to have a future.
Joining us on the show is Canadian recording artist Kendall. Make sure to check out her website, kendallmusic.com. Your song Demon, I would say, really gets your feet stomping and I think is a great song to sing along to. Tell us about the conception of that song.
I was watching like a lot of Westerns and Tarantino movies at the time. Don't know if you can tell that. And I was like, I bought the soundtrack for The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And I was like, wow, like you can put chains and whips in a song. And next thing I knew, Demon was written. And I couldn't really stop the direction at that point.
That's awesome. Do you find, being a female Canadian artist, is there a lot of love in the industry, do you think, between female artists?
I find it very hit or miss. Like, either the girls are like, yeah, girl power, let's stick together, there's so few of us, or they're like, my competition, tie.
Wow.
So it really depends.
Is there an artist in Canada, whether male or female, that you really look up to, apart from your dad?
Yeah, there's probably a few. I'd say one of the biggest ones for me is actually Sam Roberts. And he's just super wise and kind, and he made a very successful career for himself out of basically being an honest, hardworking, amazing guy. And I always like to think of that whenever you're dealing with bad business or bad people, and you're like, you know, keep it real, keep it honest, keep it kind, and you'll do fine.
If we can go along that path for just a second, just speaking of the business part of this, I'm assuming, like, I know the amount of work that I have to put in with my show. You know, not only am I the host and the executive producer, but I have to do a lot of the back end stuff too. And I just know there seems to never be enough hours in the day. Do you find you really have to be a businesswoman as well as being an artist? And is it hard to wear both hats?
Yes, it is hard. And unfortunately, I learned the hard way and I had to part ways with a manager that got me in some bad places and screwed me up financially. And so I had a major reality check this year of like, wow, you can't trust anyone. And I really need to read everything and know every little detail about my business or I will get robbed and I will get ripped off. So it never stops. Every day I'm working and trying to move forward and do things right and be a businesswoman, which doesn't come naturally to me at all. I'm totally the artistic type. But if you want to survive, you have to learn, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because there's so many times that I just wish I could sit and plan interviews and how that's all going to work. And you just can't. Like, you have to be aware of everything. Do you find that social media has helped advance your career?
Oh, yeah. It's very helpful. And I think it's really great that the fans that you make along the way can reach out to you and talk to you if you want. And you can promote your work for free, really. And yeah, it's very helpful. I use it a lot.
What was it like working on your first album, In Flames? I understand, if my sources are correct, that your dad was a part of the process.
Yeah, I had made records with him before with my old band and the EP. And people often have the wrong idea about how that kind of relationship would work. Like, think that, you know, daddy tells me what to do kind of thing. But it's actually the exact opposite. And in this industry, it's so male dominated and people always telling you what to do. It's really easy to get influenced by what other people are telling you. And I'd find myself in the studio just doing a demo and one of the engineers, and you know, one of these guys that has been around the sun a lot more than me, would say, oh, you should do it more like this, or you should change the key. And I would feel pressured and do what they said and regret it. So when I'm working with my dad, he's on my side. He's telling me to go with my gut. He's telling me to trust my instincts. And he's keeping it clear, which is amazing. And if I do something that sucks, he'll tell me.
Which is
great. And I'm not offended, which is also great. Because anyone else, if someone told me, like, oh, I don't like that lyric, I'd cry and fire them or something. But when it's my dad, I'm like, fine.
That's awesome. I actually wanted to ask you about, because I'm not sure about, you know, how long you've actually been in Montreal, you know, because as mentioned off the top, you're from British Columbia. Did you move here on your own or did the family come?
On my own. I just recorded the EP and had Sam Goldberg, who's our guitarist and from Broken Social Scene. I got him to play on the EP because I love his style so much. And he really liked the songs and mentioned, well, if you're ever in Montreal, we can play together. And then I like knocked on his door a couple weeks later. Hey, I moved. Can we start the band now? So he's been stuck with me now.
That's awesome. How have you found being in Montreal? Because I know, you know, I've had the great fortune to interview so many artists from Canada, a lot of them from out east, a bunch from Toronto, a bunch from out west. And I, you know, especially the ones from out east, I find like a lot of them are actually staying, you know, out there and sort of having this burgeoning, you know, Halifax scene and this East Coast scene that's going on. We don't often hear, though, of a lot of people moving to Montreal. It seems like it's either East Coast or you're heading to Toronto or you're heading to Vancouver. How has Montreal influenced what you're doing?
Well, it's a very odd place because it really is like its own country, own world, own star system. So at first I was just completely fascinated and things started taking off here. And like right now in Montreal, I'm well known, I'm successful, I sell out shows, the radio plays us a lot, but it's not crossing over at all because it's its own bubble. People don't care about what's going on in Quebec and the rest of the country. So that's been a real struggle for me lately with not having, you know, very many connections or ways to get heard in the rest of the country. I'm stuck in this very awesome and supportive community here in Montreal, but nobody knows about it.
Now, do you feel the need then to either move to Toronto or even, you know, maybe head south? Because, you know, a lot of people decide, oh my God, I don't want to deal with these winters anyway. I'm going to Los Angeles or at the very least New York.
Well, I mean, for one thing, I couldn't afford it at all. But any opportunity that would ever come to play there, go there for any amount of time, we would take it for sure.
Now, you've been nominated for a 2015 Juno Award for Video of the Year for your song, Not Up to Me. How does it make you feel to be nominated in such a, you know, a prestigious category? And, you know, for people who are listening, because we actually have people that are listening, you know, in Australia and Japan right now, the Juno Awards are essentially Canada's version of the Grammys. So this is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I did not see that coming at all. Like I said, I'm kind of just here in Quebec running the market here, and I didn't think the rest of the country had really noticed what I was doing yet. So this nomination is really exciting, and especially the song and the video that we did, it has a strong message and meaning to it. And we released it with Canadian Women's Foundation, which is a program to help, a foundation that helps abused girls that are dealing with anything from physical abuse, mental abuse, any really way to help these girls. And I didn't know if it would matter if people would pay attention, but they did. And a lot of girls have connected with it and use it kind of as their own personal anthem for seeking help and getting past their issues. So it's really exciting that people are connecting with it like that.
What would you say is your main goal as a recording artist? Where do you see yourself in the next like 12 months and even long term?
I would love to just branch out more, just get busier and keep playing and all over the world and have the opportunity to be heard by as many people as possible and maybe even get paid one day.
That's always key, that is for sure. Kendall, thank you so much for spending time with us on the show. We're really happy to have you and we welcome you back anytime.
Thank you.
That is a Canadian recording artist, Kendall. Again, make sure to check out her website, kendallmusic.com.
Hey, this is Kendall and you're hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show.
You better keep that demon outside of your heart. You better keep that demon outside. You ought to keep your women inside of your home. You ought to keep your women inside.
Indie rock group Girls in Hawaii have just released their new album called Everest. The band hails from Belgium but have a real British sound to their music, and they've come a long way considering they've had to overcome the death of their drummer, Dennis. We're happy to welcome the group's guitar and keyboard player, Francois Gustin, to the program. Francois, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Hi. Thank you.
Thank you so much for making time for us today. And I want to start off by asking you how the group actually came together and why choose the name Girls in Hawaii?
Good question. Well, I think that the group came together in the early 2000s, and the band was kind of an invitation to travel, you know, because we originate from the suburbs of Brussels, and there's not much to do there. And Girls in Hawaii was, you know, we found a way to express them and the need to move away from where we come from.
Okay. And how many were you in the group originally, and has the roster changed at all?
Well, we've always been six, and the roster has not changed that much, actually. Of course, we have a new drummer now, and I wasn't there in the very beginning. I joined the group in late 2010, after Dennis's death, and I just replaced the former keyboard player. That's the changes.
I want to speak a little bit about the impact of Dennis being gone, but first I wanted to ask you, how important is it for the group to actually record music in English?
Well, the music that we listen to is in English, so it's very natural for us to use that language to convey our ideas, and we can't really imagine singing in French, for instance. It feels so unnatural. That's weird, but I think we never imagine singing in any other language.
How has the response been from people, you know, in your hometown and maybe around from that part of the world with regards to the fact that you do sing in English and maybe they would want you to embrace, you know, the hometown language?
Well, it's pretty standard here to have bands sing in English. And the thing is, by the time of our first record, our English was pretty bad. It's a lot better right now. So, you know, it doesn't feel as awkward as it did in the first place.
Now, did the band know right away? I know you joined later, but did the band have a good sense initially of the sound that you guys wanted to produce? Or did it take a while for the sound to gel and sort of figure out, like, yeah, this is what we're doing?
Well, I think it all began as a bedroom project with Antoine and Lionel, which are the two songwriters in the band. And I think at first they weren't really concerned about how their music would sound. They just tried to make songs and, you know, put things together. And I don't know, I think we grew musically along the way. And the priority in the very beginning was to make songs that would make sense.
Now, we have to speak about the fact that the drummer, Dennis, passed away. And I read that it was almost the end of the band. So how did you guys sort of stick together and decide to continue recording after his passing?
Well, actually, the band didn't exist anymore after his death. I think we can fairly say that. Well, Dennis was the brother of Antoine, the singer and songwriter in the band. So it was quite a big hit for us. And, you know, it was a stupid accident. He killed himself back from a gig of a side project, Halo Cosmo, which I used to play in. And we played in Brussels, and he killed himself on the way home, which is totally stupid. And I don't know, for a long time, we really thought that it was over. And finally, over the years, we felt the need to get back together and try to play some music again.
Was it hard to find another drummer that fit with the group, especially because it's not like the drummer quit? You know, he passed away, and he's obviously related to another member. And I know, I remember, you know, just watching information about Metallica and when they lost their bass player in that tragic accident, and then they sort of gave the new guy a hard time. Has it been hard for you guys not to dump extra emotions on the new drummer?
Well, I think it's been very difficult. We first started playing with a German drummer, a friend of our bass player, and we went to the studio with with this guy. His name is Andy Reinhardt. He actually, that's the drummer that plays on Everest on our new record. And it's been very tough for him because I think his playing style was not really what we needed. And it was, at the same time, very difficult to find the right person at the time. So we made the record together, and then we decided to look for someone new. And I think it's been very difficult for him because he was a very nice person, but it didn't fit in a way. And yes, we finally found Boris, which is a longtime friend, and he said no, and we asked several times, do you please want to play drums with us? And he refused twice, so we had to insist quite a lot. And now he's in the band, and it feels like he's always been there.
That's amazing. That's great. Obviously, that helps with the band's cohesiveness. Joining us on the show is Francois Gustin of indie rock group Girls in Hawaii. Make sure to check out their website, girlsinhawaii.be. Your latest album is called Everest, as you mentioned. Can you explain the title and what you want listeners and potential new listeners to take away from the CD?
Yeah, sure. Well, Everest was kind of a code name after the second record. That would represent the kind of music that we wanted to make. Everest was really, yes, like a code. And for us, it was the idea that we wanted to drop the guitars and concentrate on keyboards, synths, and atmospheric sounds. And that was before Dennis's death. And Everest has become, after this accidental death, it has become kind of a symbol of, well, we had to climb that big mountain to overcome his death and to bring back the band together, you know?
Now, Francois, not like I want to compare your band to anything else, but if you had to compare the sound that you are, like what group of artists or bands would you put yourself into that you would say is sort of similar?
Well, obviously, I think Granddaddy has to be mentioned here because I think there's something... maybe similar in the voice and in the mixture of acoustic guitars and keyboards and synth. Yet we're not actually trying to be copycats, but I think it's fair to say that Jason Little's band has been a big influence. And if I had to choose an indie band to pick one, then I would choose that one.
Are there, you know, producers or artists that you guys would love to collaborate with in the future that you think could maybe... you know, take you guys to the next level or just add something different?
You mean to collaborate, like making songs
like
or working with a producer?
Yeah, or you're a producer for your next album. Is there a producer out there that you're like, yeah, I need to work with them?
Well, as far as producers are concerned, we haven't chosen yet the one that will work with us for the next record. But on this one, we worked with Luke Cox. It's a guy from Belgium. That's great. And we have a mix by Chad Blake, which is a great mixer and certainly added depth to our sound. Now, as far as other producers are concerned, I really like Jim Eno from Spoon. You might probably know. Mm-hmm. I think he's an amazing producer, and I'd love to work with him one day.
Now, are you guys still completely sort of based out of Belgium? And if so, is there a need for you guys to, I don't know, maybe head to England perchance, or maybe even across to the States? Is it important for you to break it in the Americas?
Well, it's not important for us to like break, you know, there. Of course, it's always interesting for us to get there and get to play there, get to know the people, get to know the scene. But it's not very high on our priority list. You know, we are kind of comfortable playing in Europe. And of course, we would love it if it was, you know, easy, if we would become big and it was easy to set up tours and all. I think that would be just fine. But sometimes it's a big effort when you're coming from the outside. You know, it's difficult to make it overseas. And so it's not really a priority for us, although we would really like to do it.
Have you noticed, Francois, with your social media that you are picking up fans, you know, from across the planet? Because obviously social media makes the world very small.
Yes, indeed. And, well, we have lots of people here in Europe because, you know, Belgium is so small. We have lots of people from the south of Europe, like people from Spain and Italy. They're constantly asking us to go play gigs there. Then we have some people from Japan. Obviously, we started having some people from Canada, and sometimes, you know, we have that random comment, please come to the States, but I think, you know, it's just maybe by chance, I don't know.
Now, I wanted to ask you, what's up next for the band? The album's out now. Do you have plans to continue touring?
Well, we've toured quite a lot, actually, in Europe, and I think we're gonna think already about the next step for us, and I think we would quickly like to get back to the studio and make the next record. You know, it's always exciting when you're on the move, and it's been so difficult for us to get the band back together that we would really love not to wait for 4 years before working on new material. I think we have to accelerate things now and get back to work as soon as we can.
And with regards to getting back to work on a new album, does the process go very well for you guys? I know obviously you've had challenges with the passing of Dennis and so on, but do you think this next time around the writing might happen much quicker and the production might much quicker?
Oh yes, definitely. I'm pretty sure of that. I think everybody in the band is conscious of what they have to do to make it happen. And for the moment, we usually work like this. Antoine and Lionel, the two songwriters, they write the songs, well, the basis for the songs, and then they send us the material, and then we talk about it. We have some ideas, and we arrange all of it together in the rehearsing room. And I think we're quite ready now to do that. It was difficult when we made Everest because there was no band, and although we had songs, it didn't mean that we could play them satisfyingly, you know. Mm-hmm. And that now that this is over, I think it's, you know, it's going to be much easier for us to go forward now.
François, we wish you all the best, and thank you so much for making time for us on the show today.
You're welcome. It was very pleasant.
That is François Gustin of indie rock group Girls in Hawaii. Make sure to check out their website, girlsinhawaii.be.
Hi, this is François from Girls in Hawaii, and you're listening to The Kelly Alexander Show.
on the remix. You put a spell on me. I like it, boy. Nobody but you. You turn me on. I love what you do when we're alone. You bring me to life, and then you're gone. Alexander Show.
As per usual, we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to spend time with us right here on The Kelly Alexander Show. I'd like to take a moment to thank my guests this week, Alan Doyle, Kendall Osborne, and Girls in Hawaii. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Isabel Allende. I never said I wanted a happy life, but an interesting one. From separation and loss, I have learned a lot. I have become strong and resilient, as is the case of almost every human being exposed to life and to the world. We don't even know how strong we are until we are forced to bring that hidden strength forward. We'd love for you to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram, at Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show, where we feature all of our interviews. We wish you a fantastic week. If you have any comments or questions, drop me a line, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I will chat soon.